Welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 2.6, where we talk about Michigan's most recent games, some pairwise, Big Ten tournament, and the return of Craig Ross. So I wouldn't exactly call myself a people pleaser, but I do try to give the people what they want. And there were some comments and requests after our last hockey cast for more Craig Ross content. So I told Adam and Anthony, hey, sorry, you're out. You can stay in Vegas or wherever you are, and I'm bringing in what the people want, and that is more Craig Ross.
I think that's not true. In fact, Brian said after scouring the mean streets of Ann Arbor and not finding anyone out on the streets who could talk about hockey, he was left with me, so he assigned me to this particular...
went through all the street people ended up with you.
But, you know, do you have song, music for this podcast?
I put a song in, usually in the break, yeah.
In the break?
Do you have a good song?
I'm thinking of Joe Jackson's Sloth.
Sloth?
Yeah.
And why is that?
I don't know, but it's like, give me a bud and a slice and leave me alone. Something like that. So I'm thinking of Brian wandering around the streets singing the song Sloth.
Okay.
The book. I've read one of those. Thank you.
Are you requesting that music, I guess?
Yeah, that'd be okay. Or Ben Folds, You Don't Know Me At All.
You don't know me at all. But everybody knows you.
No one.
And everybody requests you.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
And they want to know, they know that you've had season tickets at Yost for as long as the building has existed.
Pretty much true.
So they want to know what your thoughts are when you go to this building. Mm-hmm. And a couple weeks ago, Notre Dame came to this building. Mm-hmm. And we did a preview on it, which I think we were somewhat confident that Michigan would play pretty well because of how they played well in the series in South Bend, and they had played very well the next couple weeks against a high-powered offense in Wisconsin, and then a better defense with goaltending against Michigan State, and kind of outdid each of those teams in their own respective category, and it really was a tough series to watch. Now, Michigan didn't do well in points-wise. I thought they played pretty well, and we'll get into that, but they got 0 points, and I probably was never going to guess that they wouldn't win. They wouldn't get any points out of that series.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I mean, I was, after the Notre Dame series in South Bend, I thought, oh, we'll win one,
yeah,
and maybe we'll win both. But worse than that, how many goals did we score in the weekend?
One.
Yeah,
they scored one whole
goal. And I think that wasn't that on when we pulled our goaltender.
It was 2-0 late on Friday, and I think Hayhurst converted from about 5 or 6 feet away.
I think the Michigan goaltender was pulled.
Yes, yeah, because it was in the last minute and a half, because they had a chance to tie it.
They had a vague chance to tie it.
I mean, for whatever that means, they had, you know, theoretically possible for a puck to go in the net.
Yeah,
but after, I mean, we could start at the beginning of this. Yeah. Well, there's really nothing to talk about for the first two periods because nobody scored, and there wasn't really a whole lot to talk about in the first period. It was just basically a slugfest of okay chances, not great chances, until the second period when it looked like both teams should have scored 2 to 3 times, if you remember.
Yeah, I mean, I think, didn't Michigan have 2 odd man chances from...
They actually had three.
Three.
One on a power play breakaway that Lockwood got right down the slot and didn't score. Yeah. And Hayhurst had a 2-on-1 that the defender completely took the pass, and so it kind of became a semi-breakaway, and Morris just stoned him.
Yeah. Well, Morris played very well, and that was key to the whole weekend. I mean,
which he did not play quite as well back in South Bend, if you remember.
Agree. You know, my feeling about this, and this may be Jeff Jackson, is that Notre Dame was not going to let Michigan skate across the blue line.
Right.
I mean, they were going to throw guys, all their guys, basically, out in front of the blue line and make Michigan dump the puck and then fight for it in the corners.
Yeah.
And in the end, it never really worked out to getting many good shots. Of course, Notre Dame wasn't getting any shots either. I mean, they were playing a very conservative, let's not make any mistakes sort of game.
And more or less, that's been Notre Dame hockey for as long as I've been watching Michigan hockey. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's Jeff Jackson, very defensive, very conservative attacking, not going to make mistakes when you have a good goaltender, which they do. Morris has been playing really well, especially the weekend in Ann Arbor. And their defense is very positionally sound, very much the way Michigan has become in the last few months or since the second half of the season. And they weren't terrible in the first half either. I mean, you can tell that this defense has gotten better with the new coach and everybody sort of finding their role. But Notre Dame basically did that to a T. And was played that weekend defensively about as perfect as you could.
Yeah, I think on Friday night was 0-0 with about 14, 15 minutes.
Yeah, it was about a few minutes into the third period.
When they finally scored, and it was deflating in the building because at that point you felt like, how are we going to score a goal here?
Yeah, I remember a guy got loose and shot and just beat man on, or it was a deflection sort of off his shoulder. And he reached back to cover it, and the stick jammed it in. And I remember going in and thinking, okay, Michigan could tie this. It's one goal. Anything can happen. But if they get another one, forget it.
Yeah.
And that's a few minutes later, got the second, and you're just like, well, I just started writing. I was keeping my eyes on the ice, but I was like getting my thoughts together because I'm like, the way that they're playing, their defensive style, the way Morris is playing, it's going to take two miracle snipes to beat him. And, that's the thing that has sort of troubled Michigan is when they need a goal, they don't have a guy who can go out and create and get a great chance beating a guy one-on-one. Like they say in soccer, sometimes when you're facing a defense, you need a winger who can take somebody on one-on-one and beat him. Or in basketball, like you're saying, when you need a bucket, who can you go to that can get into the lane or get fouled? And Michigan doesn't really have that elite scorer the way that they've had in the past. And they've found patchwork ways around it, but when you're in a situation like this where you absolutely need a guy to take a shift and get a good chance on net, maybe draw a penalty, they just didn't have a guy, and that's basically how the whole weekend played out.
Well, and to some extent, it's how the season has played out. I mean, and it's why perhaps Mel has done a pretty good job here because Michigan doesn't really have goal scorers. I mean, they certainly don't have an elite goal scorer.
Right.
And so when you don't have that, you've got to, I think, play a little bit different style of game. Now, back in the 90s when Michigan had Morrison and Botterill and just a gazillion goal scorers, I mean, defense was almost an afterthought. They were going to score 6, 7, 8, hell, 10, 12 goals a game. We saw often.
Right.
If we give up a couple of shaky goals, what does it matter? We'll just go down and score again.
Yeah.
And this team isn't that. Mm-mm. And it may be sort of reflective of the entire Big Ten, which really there hasn't been a ton of scoring in the conference this year. Penn State has scored some, but
Penn State has been, and we can talk about them a little later. They're good on offense, but they aren't consistent at all on defense. Their net play has been better than in previous years, but I mean they used to be, the old school Oklahoma of a few years ago of college hockey where we're going to score 70 and give up 65.
Right.
And they would score 7 and give up 6. And, eventually when you play that way and you play against a team that's organized in the back end, you don't get your 7, but if you're sloppy, you might still give up 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And so the other thing that was interesting to me about this, and this is relatable to game 2 as well, is that there just weren't a lot of special teams chances, at least for Michigan, because Notre Dame has, had at least by the numbers, a poor penalty kill. They were about 77% coming into that series. And I thought if Michigan can draw some penalties the way that they have the previous few weeks and move the puck well, get a goal or two, they would be all right. And they just couldn't really get that many opportunities. They didn't draw that many penalties. I think they only had 4 power plays all weekend. Notre Dame only had, I believe it was 6 all weekend, which isn't a lot when you think it's a couple games. So the game was played 5-on-5. Michigan did have the puck a lot, and they definitely dominated the first game. But like we were saying, the defensive performance from Notre Dame's defense and from Morris was just it wasn't, I don't know that anything was going to overcome that weekend.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly Michigan, you know, without top end scoring wasn't going to overcome it, but it was incredibly disappointing, and it felt a lot like, okay, we're done. You know, we've got Notre Dame here in Ann Arbor. We had a real chance to win the Big Ten. I mean, a really good chance to win the Big Ten.
Yep.
Even with a split, we have a good chance, and with both, we're, you know.
Yeah, if they would have won two, it would have been.
It would have been Michigan's probably going to win the conference.
Yeah.
And so it was incredibly deflating both nights to not only not win, but basically to not score a goal.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, they played well enough on the defensive end. Like, we didn't talk as much about Saturday yet, but, like, the same thing where it's 0-0 going into the third, and Notre Dame got a goal.
Again, about 6 minutes in, maybe?
Yeah, it was into the third. Maybe not quite that long, but they got a nice snipe, and then a couple minutes later had a 3-on-2 that I think it was Morrison beat the defender around the end, and then sniped it and beat Mann on a great shot. Mm-hmm. And Mann played well. Like, we were talking about Morris. It's not like Mann didn't play well. It's just that, like, they didn't score any, and he gave up a goal or two on good shots, and that was the difference. And, you know, I thought Notre Dame played a little better even on Saturday, limiting Michigan's chances more than they did in volume. But in the end, you know, Notre Dame just had a better weekend, and everybody played up to their potential, I think, and Michigan didn't quite do that.
Yeah, I mean, it just came down to that. I mean, they were very even defensive games, but Notre Dame took advantage. They didn't have a lot of opportunities, but they took advantage of the few that they had,
right,
and the few that Michigan had.
They couldn't. It's like timely hitting in baseball in a pitcher's duel.
Right.
When you got a couple guys on, you got to get a big hit because it might not happen for a while.
Right.
So coming out of that series, Michigan's going to Minneapolis.
And when everyone, at this point in time, you're thinking, you know, we could finish sixth.
Well,
right?
Yeah, because they were in, I think,
fifth or sixth.
But up by like a point, I think,
right,
or two over
everyone
Michigan State.
Everyone is blocked together, but
right,
you're going to Minnesota. Minnesota's playing very good hockey.
They had, I think, the most points in the Big Ten in the second half going into that, or something about or around that area. I mean, as good as Michigan had played in the second half, Minnesota had actually lengthened their lead on the Wolverines, which was crazy given how many games Michigan had won. Because I remember at the start of it in January, both teams are about the same, and Michigan gets on this tear, and I'm like, oh, a couple wins, they'll fly right past Minnesota. Well, 2 months later, Minnesota's still up by 2 points.
Right.
You're like, Michigan's barely dropped any points.
Right.
And so going into the game, you know, you thought, well, they've done better there in the last few years than they had in the previous few decades. But I wasn't, like, holding my breath by any means.
Right.
And they start game one pretty well. They get out to a goal lead early. And then Minnesota just turns it on offensively after the first period, and just starts overwhelming Michigan from everywhere, it seemed like.
This was a game where Minnesota really had the edge in play after Michigan went up 1-0.
Yeah.
And I think by the time the game ended, I believe that Mann had 52 saves.
Yeah,
it was in the 50s,
yeah.
I know that.
Which was close, if not an actual record.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a record or not, but I can't recall a game with a Michigan goalie having more than 50 saves.
No.
I
mean, Sauer got there one time, I remember, but it was right around 50. This one was into the 50s for sure. He had, I think I tweeted, that was probably his best game of the year, if not his career, just because Michigan's defense was getting pulled to the side and pulled out of position at times, that he was not just stopping shots from the point, but he was making, like, very great positional saves. He was in the right spot. He was moving. They weren't, like, Hasek flailing, you know, from his spine to his feet to his, you know, head saves, but they were one side of the ice to the other, getting across, tracking the puck. He just put in as good a performance as I've seen a Michigan goalie since probably the Hunwick era.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. I mean, Straussman, maybe we'll talk about this at some point, I think should be the MVP of the Big Ten this year. And this was as as good a game as I think you could play and could play in goal. And we were ahead, right? 2-1.
It was 2-0.
2-0. Because
they
2-1 late. Right?
Morgan had a nice goal off of a pass from Granowitz, and then Nick Pasta had a nice goal where he drove the net right around a defender and faked out Jack LaFontaine, mm-hmm. the ex-Michigan goalie, and scored and
who
put up 2-0.
Good game, incidentally.
Yeah, he had a good weekend too. Mm-hmm. So you're sitting there like 2-0, but Minnesota just comes in droves, and the Gophers get one back off of a Griffin Luce shot block,
yeah,
where he dives in front, it hits him and goes around man. And I was like, if that's the only way they can score, we're in good shape.
Yeah, that was a really weird goal because you can't blame Luce for trying to block the shot. But if he doesn't dive in front of the shot, my guess is Mann makes that save.
He could.
But, you know, it deflects off loose, and Mann then has absolutely no chance.
Right. And then probably the most controversial play of the weekend, or at least frustrating from Michigan's point of view, is Jack Becker hits a Gopher player in the head, it seems like, in the Minnesota end in the corner. There's no one really around. And he goes into the boards, and it is then... So he goes into the boards, it's a penalty, goes to the box, and they review it, and they call it a major for 5 minutes. So Minnesota's going to have 5 minutes to try to tie the game and potentially win the game because on a major penalty, if you score a goal, the power play doesn't end. So upon review of it, though, it seemed he did hit him in the head, but it seemed a little soft, and you weren't convinced it was a major?
Yeah, I thought it was a terrible major call, right, you know, I thought... Fine, it's a penalty. There had been a play earlier in the game where a Minnesota player hits a Michigan player head-to-head. It was a pretty bad hit. I don't think it was intentional, and I don't think it should have been a major. And they called it a regular penalty. I don't even know if they reviewed it. I don't recall.
Yeah, okay.
And then this one, I'm not even sure Becker hit him in the head with his elbow. I mean, he might have. It's hard to tell from the angle. But let's assume for a second that he did hit him in the head with the elbow. It was such a soft and glancing blow that it's hard for me to believe that's a major penalty. I thought it was an awful call. And of course, what happens is we skated off for 3.5 minutes, I think, right around.
Right. So if it's just a two-minute call... Michigan kills the penalty.
And probably wins the game.
The other thing I want to mention about this, and this is the thing that I've seen, and I try to tweet this when they happen during games, but it was another offensive zone penalty for Michigan.
Yeah, which is stupid.
And especially with a guy in the corner like that, there's no real upside to almost finishing that check other than, okay, maybe you hit him, knock him down, maybe you get the puck, and now you have an interesting scoring opportunity. But they're up 2-1. There's only 6 minutes to go. They're not in control, but they're in control in a way because Mann's playing very well, and there's no reason to give the Gophers an extra chance. And then, like you mentioned, they kill off the 2 minute, so to speak, and then the other goal is scored, and it's tied 2-2, and they end up going to extras. And it was just, you know... Minnesota probably quote unquote deserved it the way they played. Probably should have been 2-2.
Yeah, I mean Minnesota outplayed us on the weekend.
Yeah, but at least Friday.
At least Friday. Night, yeah. Excuse me, on this game. And so in some context, they quote deserved it. On the other hand, how many times this year has Michigan outplayed the opponent
and
ended up on the short end,
or even in the last 15 years when you think about
and
it?
So so to some extent, this goes in the basket. If my aunt has wheels, she'd be a trolley car. And so
I don't think I've heard that one before.
And so to me, that was terrible. Then we, of course, on the 5-on-5, nobody scores.
Right.
On the 3-on-3, nobody scores.
Yeah.
And then we get the shootout, which I hate. And apparently the new shootout rules, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
Is like whoever scores first.
It's best of one.
Best of one.
Which... Now it sounds a little more familiar throughout this year, but I thought it was 3 last year. Maybe they amended it.
I think it was 3 last year.
And Slaker gets it. And
well, but the mystifying thing here is...
Oh, who is Michigan's first shooter?
Right. Who is Michigan's first shooter? It's Orwell?
Emil Orwell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's not even played that much this year. And
no.
And so it was a strange choice. And I'm screaming at the TV.
You were.
Why the hell isn't Slaker taking this shot?
Well, so we when it was ticking down in overtime, you and I were watching this together, and I was like, all right, who are your three? And we were like, probably Lockwood, maybe Hayhurst. And then we were like, either Slaker, maybe Cam York. Mm-hmm. And so they skate out Orval, and you're kind of – my only thought was, okay, maybe that's his thing. Maybe in practice he has a bunch of, like, trick shots, you know, and you're going to bring him out. But he doesn't get a shot off, and it's best of one.
Right.
So even if it's best of one, are you going with the trick shot guy, or are you going with a guy who put the puck in the net 10, 15 times?
If I, at that moment in time – I didn't know it was best of one.
Right.
If I would have known it was best of one, I probably would have ripped my own liver out.
And given it to Isaiah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, in any event, the...
But Slaker scores, beats LaFontaine. They get two points, which in pairwise is only a tie.
Right. In pairwise, it's a tie, but in the Big Ten, it was two.
Unfortunately, that put Michigan in a situation where they needed to win the next night and have Ohio State lose, and then have the Notre Dame game go the correct way as well, and in order to finish like higher up in the standings, second or third. And they actually, I thought, played better in game two, where you know they were outdone by Minnesota for the last two periods, but Michigan basically turned them off. And one of the things I want to mention, because this didn't happen as much in the second game, in the first game, one of Minnesota's ways that they took it to Michigan was they forechecked them. And Anthony brought this up to me months ago, back in the Penn State series at home, where Penn State needs to forecheck Michigan. Because when you do that, they're not so great at breaking the puck out. You're putting pressure on Michigan's defense, and then you're forcing a bunch of defensive zone turnovers for a high-volume scoring team. And Minnesota did that. In game two, I didn't think they had as much success doing that. Michigan was able to get the puck out easier. They were able to stem what the Gophers wanted to do offensively. And it was a much more evenly played game in that regard. Michigan gets an early goal off of a nice play. Actually, this was that's incorrect. They got a goal, I believe, later in the game off from Jack Becker, who there was a pass, I think, in the corner, and he got free in the slot and just put it right under the bar and put Michigan up one, and Minnesota tied it.
On a dubious play in the corner by...
Oh, Luke Morgan.
Luke Morgan, yeah. He just made a poor play, and the puck ends up right in the slot in front of...
Well, he was trying to get it around the back of the net and barely got anything on it. A Gopher player took the puck, centered it, and we had a 1-1 game.
Yeah.
And then your boy, Granowitz, who I'm sure you're going to try to talk about. Slaker makes a really nice move behind the net, hits a wide-open Granowitz, who's how many feet away? Four feet away, and just buries it, gives Michigan a 2-1 lead, and they end up holding on. And it's not like the night before, where it was like an onslaught, so to speak. It was more controlled. Michigan did have to fight off the extra attacker, but... they were able to kind of stem that tide a little bit and get some clears.
Yeah.
Your boy Granowitz.
Yeah, I've liked Granowitz since I noticed him, which wasn't until sometime in January. I think he's a walk-on. He's a freshman. And he had a hat trick earlier, I think, in this month.
Against Wisconsin, I think. Yep.
And but he's the kind of guy, he may not be a great skater, he may not really be a great hockey player, but what he is something that Michigan needed, in my opinion, even though when I told Brian this, he was in the serious eye-rolling mode. He's one of these guys who is hard to move from out front of the net.
Well, he's a little bigger.
Yeah, and the best player I've ever seen at Michigan for this was Jason Botterill.
Okay.
Who, once he got in front of the net, you weren't moving him out.
Yeah.
And he was a big, strong dude, and he scored a gazillion goals from 3 feet away.
Yeah.
Just because he was going to get there, you weren't moving him out of there, and if that puck came anywhere near him, it was in the goal. And I'm not saying that Granowitz is Jason Botterill, because I think that's highly unlikely. But what he is a guy who does have some ability to put the puck in the net when he's around the goal. And that's something that Michigan has lacked. And I think we checked before at the show. He's only had 31 shots
yeah.
on the goal this year.
Right.
And, he's scoring at 7.
Yeah, which is a pretty high percentage.
It's a absurdly high percentage.
Probably too high of a percentage.
Yeah, it's not sustainable. I'm not suggesting that.
But then we were talking about it, and I told you, I was like, you know, but look where he shoots from. Like, how many times do you see him carrying the zone? How many times do you see him pulling up and taking a slap shot or even a snapshot? Nothing. He's always in front. So when you're shooting, I mean, it's like a layup percentage, right? When you're shooting from close range, your shooting percentage is going to be significantly higher. Now, you know, 22% or whatever it is.
Except against Wisconsin.
That's fair. In basketball. Yeah. But it's probably going to be higher than your average of, you know, 8, 9, 10%. But, you know, not 20 something, yeah, more likely. But you're right. He is a good piece. And with Michigan's having to find different ways to score goals, having a guy who can be in front of the net, Nick Pasta's done that for part of his career, not to maybe the same success. And Jack Becker even started a little bit like that. So to have him on the second or third line where you can, if you can get a guy and get him the puck down there, I mean, we've seen it happen a number of times now.
Well, and think of it this way. Penn State, who may have the most offensive team this year in the Big Ten.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Their leading goal scorer is 11.
12, I think. But
12?
Yeah.
Okay, 12.
Yeah.
And this guy's got 7.
Yeah.
And he's barely played.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm excited about him going forward, especially next year with perhaps some more advanced skaters coming into
the
program.
Yeah. No, if you can put him in front and get a guy that can get him the puck easier, you're right. I mean, that's a nice piece for the rest of this year. And then he's only a freshman, so going forward. So this segment's run a little bit long, so we should take a break, and we'll come back, and you have some interesting ideas as to how penalties should be called in hockey?
Yeah, based on the major penalty in the Minnesota game, and based upon an idea from one of my brothers, I have a whole new idea about penalties.
So you better stick around for segment 2 and Craig's new penalty calls. Yeah.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case? Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
As previously teased, Craig, you have some new ideas for penalties that you think that hockey should incorporate.
Yeah, everything's getting reviewed anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like they're reviewing offsides if someone decides.
So, on a goal, yeah.
So, and since penalties are important, I say review them all.
Okay.
Call them all as 2-minute penalties in the first place, and then review them, and then give them I would put them in the following baskets on the review.
All right.
One would be a 15-second penalty.
15 seconds.
That would be for horseplay.
For horseplay. Okay.
Horseplay.
All right.
And then
does that involve like riding around like on a stick or?
It's just a minor little thing. They thought it was worse than it was, so you get 15 seconds for horseplay.
Okay.
You get 30 seconds for hijinks.
For hijinks.
Right.
Is that part of casting a spell? Or?
Yeah, it's just not, you know, a little worse than horseplay.
A little worse than horseplay,
And then 45 seconds tomfoolery.
Of course.
And then a minute for shenanigans. and then this
is that
one.
For an Irish penalty?
Yeah. And then this one, which I only hear in hockey, and I don't know where. Giving him the business.
Giving him the business.
I have no idea what giving him the business means, but that's a minute and a half penalty.
I feel like that was an NFL penalty at one point.
Giving him the business.
Okay.
And then roughhousing.
Roughhousing.
Roughhousing. Not quite as bad as roughing. Roughhousing, a minute 45, 2 minutes for your standard everyday roughing. And then you'd have the various major penalties, which would all be mayhem levels 1, 2, or 3. You know, and which would be 3, 4, or 5 minutes.
Second-degree mayhem.
Right, second-degree mayhem, third-degree, first-degree mayhem. You know, essentially decapitating an opposing player.
But it's worse than – is it the same as you would set up, like, a murder conviction? Or is it the opposite, where, like, first-degree is the worst?
Third-degree.
Okay. Third-degree mayhem is
pretty
only,
bad.
But it's
you deserve
not,
3 minutes, and that's okay. A major – 4 minutes is bad, and 5 minutes is really bad. And so now, I mean, we all know, I mean, I don't know what the penalties are now. Hooking, holding means nothing. They all look the same to me. So, I mean, I think you should just call them horseplay if it's really sort of nominal and have them review it. And this is kind of a shenanigan, or he was giving him the business. That's a minute. That's what I think the penalty
is. That what happened to Lockwood when he got bent over the boards by
Lockwood was getting bent over the board and had a stick across his neck.
Yeah.
I would call that
second degree mayhem.
Okay. That should have been mayhem.
His head didn't actually come off.
It didn't come off.
So it wouldn't have been first degree mayhem.
Exactly.
I see.
So that's what I think about penalties. And I think that I actually give this to my brother Roger, who was watching a hockey game with me, and he said, that isn't roughing. That was rough housing. It wasn't really as bad. And I thought, you know, there's an idea.
It's like roughing light.
Yeah.
I see.
So in any event, that's my idea. It's an idea whose day will never come but should come.
Did you have any ideas for goalie penalties or nothing in that sense?
Well, it just depends what he does. You look at it and you say, it wasn't so bad. That was, you know, horseplay. Or that was, you know, he was giving him the business. That's
okay.
A little worse.
Okay.
So
your other idea, well, this, I mean, it's probably not going to be better than this idea, but and it's a good one. And we actually talked about this with Anthony a little bit, and we were debating how, if this makes any sense. But we all kind of were thinking, should Strauss Mann be the Big Ten MVP? Not the Hobey Baker winner, but just in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And you seem to think so.
Very much. I my instinct was he should be the MVP from watching every team this year and seeing just about every game Michigan played. But then I started going through the league and said, okay, if it isn't Strauss Mann, who is it?
Who is it, right?
And I only came up with three other candidates and one is Cole Caulfield.
Who's just scoring it and in – a really good rate. He has the most goals in the conference.
Yeah, he has 19 goals in the conference. The problem with Caulfield is 19 goals isn't like crazy great. It's good.
Yeah.
And he's a freshman.
Right.
And he's on the last place team. In fact, that team is so far the last place team. When you look at goals, it's like off the charts.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me to see giving a most valuable player award to a guy who's playing with a crappy team in last place.
Because even though he's playing well, it's not really making that much of a difference.
It's not making,
so how valuable is he?
Right.
Where are they going to fall to? Last place?
Right. If he had 40 goals, I'd say, okay, maybe that's the case.
Yeah.
And we've certainly had guys at Michigan who've had 40 goals. But, you know, he's got 19.
Sure.
Not the other guys... Was Nate Soucis.
Soucis
at
Penn State.
He is the leading scorer in the conference.
He has, 38 points?
38 points, but he only has 11 goals. Are you really going to give a guy an MVP who's got 11 goals? I mean...
Well, that's the problem with Penn State, is that they don't have one... I mean, well, problem. It's actually probably a good thing, but they don't have one guy that just is overtaking everyone. They have about four or five that are all kind of the same. And when that happens, there's not really an MVP. It's more of like a line MVP or a team MVP because they're all doing similar things.
Yeah, and the only other... That's correct. I agree with that. And the only other person I can think of is Kotarenko at Michigan State, who does have 33 points in 34 games, which is good. But is it really that good? And I don't know. I've watched him. He's a good, solid player. Is he something that you would say, oh, yeah, that guy's the MVP of the league? And I say no. And on the other hand, you watch what Strauss Mann has done this year. I mean, he's got a 1.97 goals against, which, I mean, there's only one or two guys in the country with somewhat better numbers than that.
Right.
And they're not that much better. And he's got a 9.36, I think, save percentage, which, again,
which is very
in
good.
The top six in the country, five or six. And they get the people ahead of him are, you know, might be one goal difference on the season.
Yeah.
And so it's – and his numbers are really good, and his play has been – for anyone who's watched him this year. And the other thing about Mann is, has he had a bad game this year?
He's had a bad goal here or there.
One or two bad goals on the year. Have you come and say, oh, man, Mann just had a bad game this tonight?
No.
I don't recall that.
No. His bad games are like, oh, he was just kind of average.
Right.
And he gave up a couple goals that were, those saves, but they're not like, like what happened with Wisconsin goalies dropping the pucks in their own net type of thing. So
I mean, maybe there's someone else.
So the only other guy, the goalie for Michigan State, which
he's been good.
Lethemon has been very good. Mm-hmm. He has a slightly higher save percentage,
9.37, so it's a thousandth or whatever that is.
But his GAA is also a little bit higher. Mann's played in more games, though, and played more minutes. And his team is has finished better. And in their head-to-heads, Mann has outplayed him, at least in the second half. You know, maybe the first half, Lethemon was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you could go with him as well.
I mean, I guess
we could see what happens this weekend.
I mean, exactly. To me, I was thinking, well, maybe this is the head-to-head. Winner gets MVP, assuming that, you know, the winner, assuming it's not an 11-10 game.
Yeah. Well, given both of these teams, and we'll get into that in a second, that doesn't seem very likely. So you had some numbers that we talked about last time about Michigan's goal differential versus other teams in the Big Ten.
Yeah, the Big Ten is so curious this year. I've never seen anything quite like this. You've got three teams who've scored the same number of goals as they allowed.
So just like literally dead even.
Right, literally dead even.
Their goal differential is zero.
Zero.
That is crazy.
OSU, Notre Dame, MSU are all at dead even.
Yeah, I
see
that.
And then Minnesota's really not that much positive, four.
They're plus four, yep.
And then you've got Wisconsin minus 26, another reason not to give Cole Caulfield the MVP when your team is, you know, so far buried.
When you're scoring a lot of goals and you still can't win games.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you've got Michigan and Penn State filling in the other 22, and Penn State is plus 9, Michigan's plus 13, which is, and I think in Michigan's case, I don't know about Penn State, is actually a slight distortion because I think we're like negative 2 or 3 in empty net goals on the season in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And so when you push that on the equation, and so but leaving the empty netters in, on the season, Michigan is 92 goals scored, 72 against.
That's including their non-conference.
Non-conference. And if you do a Pythagorean theorem via Bill James, you come up with a 21-13 record in 34 games. So you would expect Michigan to be 21-13, which would be so easily into the NCAAs, it's probably a two seed at worst.
Well, I mean, they're right on the fringes right now, and we'll get into that in a second, but
instead they're 16.
They're right on the verge,
They're 16-14-4. So I think from this, and Bill James used this with baseball teams to evaluate randomness and luck. Mm-hmm. I mean, And
even with their better bounces, they're still probably on the negative end of the luck scale here, where if they probably deserve, in all things being equal, deserve a few more, maybe another win or two, like you were saying. They should have had 2 to 3 more wins than what they did.
Yeah, when we were talking before the podcast, I had said, well, you change two goals for Michigan, if you can pick them.
Yeah.
If you change two goals on the season, they win the conference.
Yeah.
They're sitting out this week.
Yep.
And you said, oh, no, one.
Yeah, because
– one.
Well, they needed to win one game they lost.
All right.
So – and there was – I mean, we've been over this a bunch of times, how many goal chances they had of leads they've blown. So but that's not the case. And so now Michigan is in the Big Ten tournament. They are playing this weekend. Penn State is sitting out, like you had mentioned. And, you know, we were watching – after the Minnesota game, we were watching a little bit of Wisconsin-Ohio State and trying to figure out who to root for here. You know, obviously, you want to finish higher, but finishing third and getting Michigan State in the first round, there's an argument that that's maybe better than finishing second and getting Wisconsin just because of, yeah, you know, they do give up goals, but if you watch any of that Wisconsin-Ohio State series, Wisconsin took 5 points from Ohio State in Columbus, and in the second game, Wisconsin was down 3-0, came back to tie it, and had a couple chances to win it in regulation and in 5-on-5. And so, you know, I don't know. I Michigan is matched up well against Michigan State, and sending Wisconsin to Ohio State isn't the worst thing in the world, where if Ohio State does win, Michigan gets to go to Columbus and play a team that they've been able to skate with all year, didn't always get the best outcome, but were never really run out of the game. And if Wisconsin wins, then Michigan gets to host at Yost. And for the second straight weekend, assuming Michigan beats Michigan State, of course, where that's part of the assumption of this, but it's probably arguably the better draw.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, part of the problem is, I mean, the reality is Lethemann's a very good goalie.
Yeah.
And he's unlikely to give Michigan very much.
The way that he did before.
Yeah, and I think maybe his worst games on the season were against Michigan. And
it's quite possible, yep.
And so I wouldn't count on that happening again, because I think he's quite good.
Although he did give up 3 last time they were Yost. They won the game because Michigan collapsed. Yeah. But, well, let's look at this. So they've played 4 times
correct
this year, and it the games went 2-2 in total. But there were 3 probably 50-50 Corsi games that Michigan finished ahead in a little bit, and then they kind of got worked in the game at LCA.
But they won that one.
But they were up early so much, and they finished goals there that, you know, you have to kind of look at close Corsi sometimes when in certain situations, because when you're up by a number of goals, the other team is just going to, you're going to play a little more defensively because there's no reason to overextend yourself and give away a cheapie. And so Michigan has skated with Michigan State all year. They've mostly controlled a lot of the play in those games until, like I said, the very end. But, I think that Michigan can benefit from this game being at even strength. If you look at the Corsi numbers, Michigan's about 24th, which is slightly better than average. Michigan State's down around 45th. So they don't have the puck a whole lot. They don't have a lot of shots. You know, the power plays are very similar, 18 and 19%.
Yep.
Their penalty kills are similar, 83 and 82%. Mm-hmm. Michigan, I would argue, has a little more talent. They have a few more drafted players, 7-4. And each team has like one guy who's scoring over 0.75 points per game. You mentioned Kotarenko.
Yeah, Kotarenko.
Slaker's had a very good second half. He's the guy for Michigan. And then the goalies are about the same. You know, our last sample size is Mann probably outplaying Lethemann. But
they're both really good.
They're both
goalies.
Very good. Yeah. I would say that if the games at Yost, Michigan has played very, very well the past few months. Michigan State has had a better start to the season than they had more of a finish. And so I'd probably give the slight edge to Michigan. They have a couple of their lines are really starting to come together. They're getting goals not just from one or two guys at the top, but Michigan's goal numbers and statistic numbers, if you looked at them throughout the year, were very poor. And now you're getting a number of different guys' scoring numbers are coming up because they've all been scoring lately. None of them are great because they haven't had great seasons, but they've had good couple months. And so it's not always going to be reflective because you're going to look at it and say, oh, he's at 0.5 points per game. Okay, but he might have been at 0.2 points per game, you know, a month or two ago. So Michigan I probably give them the edge. Again, I like the matchup. I think that if you can forecheck Michigan State's defense, and if you don't take a lot of penalties and you make them beat you 5-on-5 by hemming them in their own zone, you know, I generally like the idea of Mann in a goalie duel. I think he's going to generally prevail in those. He didn't with Morris, but given the state of Notre Dame's defense versus Michigan State's defense, I like Michigan's chances to get a few better opportunities.
This has been such an up and down season. in Michigan sports.
That is true.
I mean, we thought in December we thought hockey was, you know,
it was done.
Yeah, they were as dead as a trout in a tub of motor oil. And I mean, that's
Making these up?
No, that actually, I don't know where.
Okay,
I wish I made that one.
That's
someone
a good one.
Someone else made that.
Okay.
But that's, you know, that's what it felt like.
It definitely felt like that.
And then all of a sudden, we don't lose a game in January.
Nope.
And mostly the play continues in February. Mm-hmm. And you got Notre Dame coming in here in Ann Arbor, a team that we just beat twice mm-hmm. in South Bend, mm-hmm. and we're ready to rock and roll. Mm-hmm. This is old Michigan hockey. Mel has done it. And we laid a complete egg in those games. And so I just don't know what we're going to get. I feel the same thing in basketball.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, we were talking about this the other day.
You just don't know. It's like
the difference is that, you know, we talk about basketball and you know, Michigan's shooting goes up and down on a week-to-week basis, it seems like. The difference with hockey is that they've been very consistent in net and very consistent in their own end. Mm-hmm. The basketball team has had defensive lapses and has bad matchups. Yeah. Michigan hasn't – I haven't really seen a team that gives Michigan a bad matchup in terms of – what it does to their defense or their goalie. Maybe a little bit Minnesota last week where they forechecked them and put them under pressure, but that's the only team that's done that to Michigan this year that I can really remember other than a game here or there, but nothing consistently. And so when you are going to get that strength at the back like that, if you get any scoring at all, any bounces at all, or the other team doesn't play well in their own zone, I just really like their chances. Now, does that mean it's going to work out if they have to go to Columbus, who's a very good defensive team, and play against Ohio State, or against a, you know, Arsenal in Happy Valley and against Penn State? You know, I don't know. But against a team that doesn't generally score a lot, who hasn't, you know, their goal differential, we were talking about goal differential, they've both given up the same amount of goals. Difference is, Michigan scored about 10 or 15 more goals than State has. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're right. Anything can happen this weekend, but I think that Michigan has, I will say, a skate up in this, at least for this weekend. Now that can be given away.
Here's where logic and instinct tend to diverge. I mean, logically, I agree with you. I think I think Michigan should win. Mm-hmm. I think we're at home mm-hmm. with a team we're probably slightly better than, and we're at home. On the other hand, that's what I thought against Notre Dame, so I ain't predicting nothing.
Okay, that's fair. Speaking of Notre Dame, they finish fifth and they go to Minnesota. You know, I wrote in the rooting guide, I said, you know, whatever you feel more comfortable you should root for, because there's pros and cons to either one. I personally would rather see Minnesota than Notre Dame because of, like, what you mentioned about Notre Dame and the way they can shut you down. But Michigan, I think, can break Minnesota down easier than they can Notre Dame. But there's also a chance that they don't even see them till the final anyway. So last thing we wanted to look through, we looked at this weekend, is just some pairwise stuff because Michigan has jumped up to 16th. Not by much. Like, if you look at College Hockey News, does a great job laying a bunch of things out. But Michigan is up, I think, by 0.002. They're out of like 18th or 19th place. So they're up two positions by such small margin. But on the other hand, they're also only like 0.007 out of 12th, which is, I mean, 12th is definitely in the tournament. Now, it happens to be Arizona State who doesn't play, so they're probably not moving a whole lot. But Michigan has a chance to move up a few spaces. They're going to need some luck. I ran some stuff on collegehockeyranked.com, and if everything goes Michigan's way, like pretty much everything, they can get up to about 12th or so. If it doesn't, obviously, depending on what happens around them, they can still move up, assuming they win. If they lose a game, it could get a little dicier, but if they sweep, I think there's the potential, if they can get a break or two, to move up a few more spots. And we talked about how, you mentioned this too, how I think it looks like right now, and this could change, but right now 14th is probably in the tournament. Sometimes it goes up to 13th. If a lot of randomness happens, it can go to 12, but usually with the, well, at least this year, with the amount of teams that are in the top 12 from are evenly distributed across four or five conferences. So the odds are that one of those teams is going to win each of the tournaments, and so therefore there's not going to be as many bid stealers.
Yeah. I'm guessing if Michigan finishes at 14th in pairwise, they'll end up in the tournament. And I think if they sweep Michigan State, even if they lose in the semifinal game,
they might have to win that one. I'm not sure. It's going to be close. Yeah. That's going to depend on sort of these teams around them.
And where it is. Who
exactly. And some of these little teams around them. Maine, Quinnipiac, Massillon, and then below them, just below them, Minnesota, Northeastern, and Western. So there's a lot of different games that are going on. Obviously, it's better if Michigan sweeps. I don't think they're – I mean, obviously, they're probably not going to get to the 12th unless everything goes their way. But if they get a couple wins, they probably move up one or two spots. And then now you're in a position where probably a win next week solidifies it. However, if they get those breaks, I mean, we could be talking about them not even being a 4 seed, maybe being a 3 seed if they continue in this long enough, which is something that, you know, what they were – I think Nate Wells – who's great for Minnesota hockey. He covers a lot of stuff, does a lot of great things for them, and the Big Ten for that matter. He put out a tweet that listed the biggest risers in pairwise since, I think, December 26th, and Michigan has gained the most spots since then. It's like 22 spots they've jumped.
Yeah, we were like
38th or something like that.
Yeah, we were in the low 30s, I think, in December, maybe even as high as low as 40. And so, yeah, the increase has been remarkable. I mean, it's been a remarkable season. And really, in some sense, I think, almost regardless of what happens against Michigan State, it's been kind of a fun, successful season, at least in this calendar year.
Yeah.
It was no fun in December, that's for sure.
No.
Or November.
No, and they've beaten good teams. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what you want to see is to be able to not just clean up on teams that aren't so good, but go on the road, win at Notre Dame, win at Penn State. So,
Minnesota.
That's true. So, thanks for joining me again, Craig. You seem to be pretty popular with the hockey crowd, or the MGO blog crowd, or maybe just the sports crowd in Ann Arbor. So, if people raise enough hell, maybe we can bring you back for another one.
You never can tell if all the rest of the hockey commentators are incarcerated. I may be back.
Sounds good. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the Michigan Hockey Cast. I'm Craig Gross. We're doing it with host David Nasternak on MGO Blog. And I'm not going to say anything stupid. I already said too much stupid stuff. That's it.